British Sky Broadcasting presents The Walker, starring Woody Harrelson, Kristen Scott Thomas, Lily Tomlin, and Lauren Bacall. Directed by Paul Schrader. Audio described by Joe Stevenson.
She's nice, to me at least.
Well, don't let her fool you, a tiger.
She wears bite marks the way other women wear jewelry.
A trophy bride.
She got her come up and...
Viagra!
If all the pricks had been stuck into her was sticking out of her, she'd be a porcupine.
Ooh. Oh,
Carl, what an image.
I saw that. That was a cheat.
Now, wait. Are you calling me a cheat?
Oh, now, come on.
I didn't mean the word pejoratively. This is Washington, after all.
And I happen to be your partner.
Yeah, that too.
Your turn.
Oh, she just said no and walked out.
Well, how much did you offer?
$400 a week.
$400.
The rich have such a touching faith in the efficacy of small funds.
Tennessee Williams said that.
Mm.
So did I. That's a beautiful mouth you got going there.
What have you got over there?
Nothing, here. Really. My hand is as bad as it gets.
Here, do you want to take some of these?
Is that illegal?
Did you notice Candace Howard?
Purple is an acceptable color. Just not her color.
Not in a dress, at least.
I told her it was a wonderful fabric, and she was fortunate to get so much of it.
Someday her prince will come.
Not before she kisses a lot of frogs.
The city is asking, what can they be talking about? Such different women, what do they have in common?
You, Carl. Mm-hmm.
Besides that.
Nothing.
They know damn well what we're talking about. Them.
They wish.
Wednesday's canasta at the Hargrave.
I don't understand these women today. God forbid a man should give them anything.
Have you played?
Yes. Oh, well, sorry. No, I've not thrown down here. Yes, you're absolutely right, Natalie. I mean, it's not enough to be a wife and a mother. You've got to stand in a soup kitchen and wear a suit.
That's the former first lady.
No politics, girl. Surrounded by a sea of special interests, we float above.
Carr, Page's crowd.
You want that check?
Well, they make us sound like a coven.
Let them wonder how much we know.
How much do we know?
Everything!
All the dirt dished in this great city, all the human waste exuded by our friends and fellow human beings, all of it, sooner or later, passes through these ears. This is shit central, darlings.
Lovely.
Come on, Carr, finish that story.
Which story?
John Coring.
And Fair Juliet.
Yes.
Quiet dinner for six in the South that's like Tenderwood. John, Julie says to her husband, why is it you never fuck me anymore?
Wow.
Her tone changes. Because when you do, you're so good at it. The room quiets. She turns to Chessie. Isn't he good at it? Chessie and her husband freeze. Just as the guests smell danger, Coring says, precious lamb, I never fuck you because ever since you went to Jenny Craig, you're such a little bitty thing I can't find you under the covers. Thrilled, Juliet answers, you really think I did some good?
I heard Coring throws from the other side.
Really?
Mm-hmm. He's straight, believe me.
You're pretty sure?
One thing I can tell is whether a man is homosexual or not.
Oh, how?
I am the gay weather vane. Little signals, you know, might be his choice of words, the way his tie is knotted, or how hard he gets when he hugs me. It's your turn.
The front of a white building with an American flag. A doorman helps Lynn into a black limousine, and Carter gets into the driver's seat. The doorman walks back up the steps of the building and watches as the car pulls out of the drive onto a road.
I'll never understand you, Carr. You luxuriate in the company of these...
You know the damage those women, well, no, their husbands have done to the things we care about.
I would fuck a congressman to stop nuclear proliferation.
Please, Carr.
Mr. and Mrs. Stanley here, the State Department, open up the Washington Post to see their precious baby daughter. chained to a nuclear train. Who was it? Peter Bayhu. Holding up a sign that says, I will F asterisk a congressman.
I'd be careful. I remember you in Jordache jeans.
Oh, please. Okay.
You still on for the opera benefit Saturday?
I thought Larry was back.
My husband hates high culture. He wasn't born to it.
Neither was I.
Well, you transformed yourself.
Yeah.
What about next week?
You mean... You gotta watch yourself. This is a brutal political climate. Whatever root there ever was in this town, there's less now than ever.
You only get to live once. What's wrong with a little pleasure?
That, my dear, is a very difficult question to answer.
Promise me you'll always be my friend.
I promise.
Once again, please call me back. I've been trying to reach you. Please call me, okay? Bye-bye.
Car, are you there? Pick up, darling. It's Abby. Car, are you there? If you're there, pick up.
Carter listens to his answerphone messages in his apartment. He smooths his jacket on a hanger. He pulls out a drawer on which there are two rows of neatly rolled ties and places the red tie he'd been wearing into an empty space in one of the rows. Carter pulls out another drawer containing boxes of cufflinks. He places the cufflinks he'd been wearing into the drawer. Shelves of neatly folded sweaters. Carter sits at a dressing table, wearing a pale lilac silk robe, and picks up a cotton bud. He dabs the cotton bud at his hair at the temples. Carter puts his hands at the back of his head and carefully slides off the grey toupee, revealing a bald head with a circle of brown hair around the sides. He stares at himself in the mirror, then gets up and puts the toupee on a stand, which he locks away in an ornate black lacquered cabinet. He goes back to the dressing table and picks up his phone.
Sunflower.
Car.
So, tell, how was that dinner party? I need a dirt fix. Was it just swell? Too much.
Oh, God, I can hear my hair growing. The Austrian ambassador. Imagine wasting me seated next to him. And the house speaker, I mean, is he always that tedious or is it just around me?
He's like one of those circus midgets. They grow an inch or two, and they lose their job. You in bed yet?
No.
Tuck yourself in. Let me tell you a bedtime story.
Carter walks down a busy street in daytime and enters an estate agent's office.
Public transport for the help. Yes, it's a little pricey, but what isn't these days? Okay. I'll call you back.
Send us out quick as you can.
Yes, sir.
Good.
I'll
get right. Car, I swear you are my most punctual employee.
Well, I was brought up right. Besides, it's only one day a week.
So, what's new on the grapevine?
Ambassador Singh still hasn't closed on that townhouse. Problem getting Foreign Affairs Ministry to approve the allocation, all that red tape.
He's not too smart as it is.
The wheel is turning, but the hamster is dead. One thing I did hear, though, this is interesting. The Detners, after the energy scandal, they overextended.
I can list 10 buyers who'd jump at that property.
A small group of men and women in elegant evening clothes walk towards the National Theatre.
How
At the foot of the staircase in the foyer, Carter, in a black evening suit, and Lynn, wearing a long black dress and a diamond necklace, are greeted by Abby DeLorean and her husband Jack, a plump man with grey hair.
Abby, you know what you are. You are an absolutely perfect thing.
Keep it coming.
Car?
I'm glad you could make it.
We must support the arts. Where's Larry?
Public policy conference.
Lucky guy.
He'd rather be anywhere than here.
She exaggerates. We don't see enough of each other. Let's get together. Why don't you call the office and set something up?
Be my pleasure.
Your father was a great man. I'm so proud of you.
Yes, he was.
Hey, Al.
Fuck him. He knows exactly how my father felt about me.
He hates my guts.
Mine too.
Why people marry whom they marry, I'll never understand.
Darling, don't let me commence.
U.S. attorney?
You know Mungo Tennant?
Not really. I was just being polite.
The audience take their seats. In one of the front rows, Natalie is talking to a tall, handsome, dark-haired man. The man excuses himself and walks, smiling, up the aisle to Carter and Lynn.
Carter, Lynn, how you doing?
Peachy.
Peachy?
That's the word.
How are you?
I'm fine, Robbie.
How are things in the private sector? Any more investment tips?
Carter, you're not still sore about Ultimate. Let's get together. Maybe I can make it up to you.
I don't want to be scalded twice.
How about next week?
Give me a call.
I'll see you then. If you'll excuse me, I have to get back to my seat.
Lynn looks away, embarrassed, as Robbie returns to Natalie, pausing to look at Jack DeLorean, who turns his back and speaks to Abby.
Con la notte forte mi secondo.
What?
From tonight's performance, the marriage of Figaro. How the night favors my secret plans.
Nighttime. Dressed in casual clothes, Carter walks down a quiet street and enters a gay nightclub. Groups of men are sitting and standing, holding drinks and talking. Carter walks up to the bar, where two men are sitting on bar stools, facing each other and talking.
Hear me.
Hey, Carter.
I tried to call you.
Not very hard, you didn't.
Don't be like that.
How should I be?
For what?
For now?
Yes, now.
We've had this discussion, didn't we?
Don't be such a kid.
Emmett blows cigarette smoke into Carter's face. Carter waves it away and brushes Emmett's face with his hand.
You want to talk?
I got a date.
With who?
Fun buddy.
Don't quote Oscar Wilde to me, anybody but Wilde.
Say goodnight, Carter.
Emmett kisses Carter on the cheek.
We talk tomorrow.
Emmett walks away, followed by Carter. Emmett stands talking to a young man. Carter walks past, caressing the back of Emmett's head as he leaves the club. Daytime. A man walks up to a bar. Four chicly dressed middle-aged women sit talking in a smart restaurant. Carter and Lynn are dining at a nearby table.
He sees himself as quite the aesthete, but when she's done with him, he'll eat red meat and women.
What about you? You talk about everyone else, but you never talk about yourself.
I'm not that interesting.
Carter raises his glass to Natalie.
I mean, you do have a private life.
let you in on a little secret. I've invented my own sex.
Carter looks slyly at two women at a nearby table.
See how they hushed? Absolutely hushed when I leaned forward, all those big ears wondering what old Carr was saying.
You haven't always been old Carr. In fact, I remember a young Carter Page who once, I believe, attempted to ask me out.
The 70s were a confusing decade. A lot of things were blurred.
Still, it was an interesting notion.
You want to hear a personal story? Okay, I'll tell you a personal story. Not about me, of course. About my grandfather, Carter Page I, Plantation Page. This is before he started dabbling in politics, became governor, 19 years old, Colesville, Virginia. He had fallen in love with a photograph of a young woman, Johanna Combs of Philadelphia. For a year, they corresponded daily, my grandfather looking at her picture as he wrote, I honestly hope that ere another Christmas shall have come, our longings will have been displaced by full fruition. My grandfather always talked like a man with a Bible half open in his head. He boarded the National to Philadelphia. That night they went to the opera. At intermission, he got up, returned home to Colesville, married my grandmother. The two pen pals, Carr and Johanna, never saw each other again. When my grandfather and grandmother had their first child, they named her Johanna.
Lynn looks puzzled as Carter smooths the tablecloth.
And that's it? That's the story?
That's all I ever heard. I'd give my right arm to know the rest of it.
Carter smiles at Lynn and drinks a glass of white wine. A black car takes a left turn out of a side street. Carter is at the wheel. Lynn looks in a compact mirror as she refreshes her lipstick.
Don't say it.
I mean, is it so important? It's just sex.
And that stuff you're breathing is just oxygen.
Must get pretty lonely up there on that pedestal.
I appreciate it. I really do. Oh, yes.
I'll bet you do.
Stop.
Carter pulls up to the curb in front of a red brick house. Lynn gets out of the car, taking off her coat as she walks towards the path. Carter moves the car further up the curb and draws to a halt. Lynn walks up the steps to the house as Carter adjusts the handkerchief in the top pocket of his pale grey jacket. Carter takes the paperback out of the glove compartment and leans back as he puts the seat into a reclining position. He takes a bookmark out of the book and begins to read. Lynn slowly walks down the steps of the house. Carter sits up looking concerned as he sees Lynn in his rearview mirror. Carter adjusts the mirror and watches Lynn run towards the car. She gets into the car and sits looking straight ahead, terrified.
He's dead.
What?
Oh, no. It was awful. You stabbed all over.
Robbie is dead.
With a knife.
I called him this morning. I was going to see him tonight.
Oh, God. You're going to call the police?
Yeah, we should.
Car.
Lynn shakes her head at Carter.
It would destroy everything.
It would destroy Larry. The media. It would destroy me.
Carter looks at Lynn, then folds up his phone.
What did you touch?
Nothing. The doorknob, the door was open.
This door's still open.
Lynn nods her head.
Let's get you home. If anybody asks, just tell them we went for a drive. Talked about the old days. I dropped you off.
Carter starts the car, then looks at Lynn.
Lynn, is there something you're not telling me?
No. No, honest, Carter. There are no fights, no, not anything. You must believe me.
I do.
It was all blood.
Carter pulls away from the curb. Later, he pulls up outside a large red brick house with a white portico. Lynn gets out of the car.
Thank you.
Lynn walks up the steps to the house. She looks sideways and sees Carter drive away. Carter pulls up to the pavement in front of Robbie's house. He looks around him as he gets out of the car, then runs lightly up the steps, pausing at the front door. Inside, Carter stares at Robbie's body, which lies at the foot of four carpeted steps leading into the lounge. Carter walks down the steps and kneels to look at the body. Robbie lies on his back, his yellow polo shirt stained with blood. There is blood at the corner of his mouth and on his hand. His legs are apart, and there is a large bloodstain on the crotch of his trousers. Candlelight flickers as Carter holds his handkerchief to his mouth and sees a cat move from behind a coffee table. Carter looks thoughtful as he walks back up the stairs, pausing at the top to look back at Robbie's body. Carter walks past the open door of Robbie's office. A cupboard door in a cabinet is wide open, with electric cables trailing onto the floor. A piece of white A4 paper lies near the cables. Carter leaves the house, slowly closing the door numbered 943. He wipes the doorknob with his handkerchief and pauses on the steps to nod at a woman on the steps of the house next door who is looking at him curiously. The woman gives a little wave of her hand and walks up the steps. Carter smiles ruefully, takes his phone out of his pocket and flicks it open.
There's been a murder. Please send the police and the EMS. 943 25th Street, Northwest. Carter Page, 3rd. Yes, I'll be here.
Carter sighs, puts the phone back into his pocket, and sits down on the steps. Later, inside the house, a forensic team take photographs of the crime scene. A detective goes into the office where Carter is standing by a large window.
So, what did your friend do?
He was a lobbyist. He'll get Lancelot. The cat.
They'll take it to a shelter.
No, I'd like to have him if possible.
How long did you know Mr. Conningsburg?
20 years. We were gonna meet about some investments. I got here and the door was open.
What do you think?
I don't know. Robbery, perhaps.
A bit violent for that. And who'd steal a computer towel? He have a laptop as well?
I imagine so, yes.
You were close.
I didn't say we were close. I said I'd known him for 20 years.
Yes?
Senator Lochner.
Carter, you heard.
Yes.
When it comes to crime, nothing in this city shocks me. Lynn said that he was at the benefit Saturday. Would you like to speak with him?
Please.
Larry holds out the phone to Lynn, who's been listening in the doorway.
Car?
How you holding up?
Fine.
Can you talk?
Not really.
I just called to say everything's under control. It's a ongoing investigation, of course.
Car.
I know. Don't worry.
Carter and Abby examine furnishing fabric.
Darling, you killed it.
It's true, that is the SARS of human sexuality.
I like this. And I bet it's a hell of a lot less expensive than Estrella or Mannheim and Fees.
Mrs. DeLorean, Mr. Page, how nice to see you again.
I like this. Made in the U.S. of A.
Oh, yeah, I've sworn off Europeans altogether. It's only Americans for me.
I know what you mean, sir. If you have any questions, I'll be right over here.
Oh, look. This is the material that Louise de Vermont had on her famous shares.
I hope it's made of stronger stuff. Louise's couldn't have lasted long given the wear she gave it.
Oh, my God. If there is a more handsome man, I want to meet him.
Carter, you are outrageous. But you are gorgeous.
Oh, thank you.
I didn't know Robbie Conningsburg very well. I didn't know you were close.
Yes, that was quite a shock.
Jack knew him. Of course, Jack knows everyone.
He hates me.
No, he doesn't. Nobody hates you. One day everything is fine, the next you're in an episode of Murder, She Wrote. Who's the woman?
What?
Isn't there a woman in every murder mystery?
Are you gonna get this fabric? It'll make the carpet read without competing. I think it's a real find.
Carr, you're absolutely right. Write this up. What would I do without you?
That we won't even contemplate.
We could deliver in Georgetown, or if you like, we could send everything to your Middleburg residence. Get around all that nasty sales tax?
Please. God, he makes obsequiousness an art form.
Detective Dixon. What a coincidence.
Oh, I was told you might be here.
Detective Dixon, Abigail DeLorean.
How do you do?
I need to speak with Mr. Page.
Shall I wait?
No. You go on. I'll take a taxi. Step into my office.
So what? You an interior decorator now?
Any progress in the investigation?
Why did you go to the apartment?
We've been over this. We had an appointment.
And the door was open?
Yes, that's what made me suspicious.
Have you contacted your lawyer?
Should I?
We'll need a DNA swab. And Mungo Tennant wants to talk to you.
Why would the U.S. Attorney's Office be involved?
He's made it his business.
A posse ad esse, from the possible to the real. That's the motto of Woodbury Forest, the prep school Carter attended, Mr. Withall. I looked that up.
One of Woodbury's less illustrious alumni.
Myself, I went to Cumberland. It was good, but not Woodbury. No, Woodbury was for the sons of the well-connected.
I didn't fit in.
No, I don't imagine you did.
Mungo, Carter has answered all your questions. What's the point?
What was the relationship between the deceased and Senator Lochner's wife?
Acquaintances. In fact, the last time I saw Ravi, I was with Lynn at the opera benefit.
That was the extent of their relationship.
To my knowledge. Have you asked Lynn?
What if we found evidence of Lynn's presence at Konensberg's condo?
Wouldn't surprise me. Ravi did a lot of entertaining.
You had a business relationship?
He advised me to purchase Ultimed stock. I made money for a while, and then I lost money.
A lot.
Considerable.
Because of Robbie.
I have only myself to blame.
If you're holding anything back about Konensberg or Lynn Lochner's relationship...
If you are going to press charges, do so. Otherwise, we're leaving.
Carter. Every year, your father would come to Cumberland to speak at a civics or an American history class. He was an inspiration. A great American. Like his father before him. It was because of him I decided to enter public service. When I heard him at the Watergate hearings, I was proud to say I was a Virginian. What are you? What have you contributed to your father's memory? Is there a name for what you are?
I believe he's called a walker, sir. He walks rich women from place to place.
Carter and his attorney walk down a corridor in the police station.
Carter, is there anything you're not telling me? Tell me now. I can't be responsible later. And don't fuck with the feds. After 9/11, they took the leash off. They do whatever they want. You want something?
No. It'll all work out.
Don't be naive.
I'm not naive. I'm superficial. Mungo Tennant knows the right questions. Somebody's leaking information about Lynn's connection to Robbie.
But how did you get involved in this?
You ever listen to real music?
This is real music.
Lynn finds the body, all hell breaks loose. I find the body awkward, but I didn't think it was such a big deal.
But now it is.
This is a mean crowd, this administration. I ain't never seen anything like it. It's a culture of revenge.
They want to revenge you, what, for your father?
Well, that's just coincidence. Lynn almost got pulled in instead of me. Robbie's death is being exploited for political reasons.
Oh, can I mention this to my editor?
Can you put down that crack pipe?
Just kidding. I just don't know how much longer I can stand to shoot photo ops.
Scarlett, look this way.
Is this a new suit?
This whole thing. You like it?
Emmick gestures for Carter to turn around. Carter twirls and winks at Emmick.
Looks a little bit like a medieval suit of armor.
Thank you.
Welcome.
I've got to figure out who tipped Tennant.
Hey, D.C. and Salt Lake. It's the last two cities where homosexuality is a ground for extortion. Lots of hypocrites.
good American family man, you can squeeze them.
That's crazy. You do that for me?
Yeah.
Why?
L-O-V-E? Love? It's normal.
Emmick pats Carter on the shoulder and laughs.
Thanks for the spelling lesson.
No thanks.
Oh, I think I'll sit this one out. Chrissy, it's your turn.
Mm. Ma'am?
I'm thinking about going on a diet.
Ma'am? It's been proven thinking about it doesn't work. To dear departed friends.
Hear, hear. All right, girls. Theories?
Well, one word, Ultramed. Konigsberg plumped for them all over town, both sides of the aisle. Everybody took donations.
Mm-hmm. Even Larry.
Oh, no, he's investigating.
Gong! The whole thing collapses. Biggest scandal since Tipato.
And nobody cares.
It's a lack of moral values.
No, it's Iraq.
No. Iraq blurs everything.
No, war dog, please.
Wasn't Robbie supposed to testify in front of Larry's committee?
I don't think so. I think he was just a messenger.
Bagman.
Yeah, cherche la femme.
Abby thinks there was a woman involved.
Isn't there always?
It could be just a robbery.
No.
Well, how about you, Carr? It's uncharacteristic of you to be so reticent about a subject so sensational.
Well, a friend is murdered, and I'm told not to comment because perhaps I am a suspect.
Well, who thinks that?
I'm Lieutenant.
How could anyone suspect you?
They go with what they have, and I'm what they have.
Lieutenant's an absolute badger.
He's ambitious. He wants to be a star.
I heard that Robbie was in trouble.
Define.
Overextended, as in his financial means couldn't accommodate his lifestyle.
Where'd you hear this?
Where do you ever hear such things?
Robbie would never let himself get into such a situation, not where he'd die over money.
It's always about money. People say it's sex, but it's money.
That's very simplistic of you, Natalie.
Speaking of money, did you know that Josh Milliford wrote a campaign song for the presidential race, Al Smith versus Herbert Hoover, 1928? You've seen good days with Hoover, better days are on the way. Money will fall from blue skies, prosperity's here to stay.
Oh, darling.
So say goodbye to Herbert. And say hello to Al. Say goodbye to Herbert. And say hello to Al.
Hello, Al.
A year later, the market crashed.
I remember.
But you were just a young slip of a girl then, not the beautiful woman you are now.
Oh, no.
Cut the shit.
Oh, cut the cards.
Len stares at Carter. They leave the building together. A doorman opens the passenger door of Carter's car, and Carter tips him. Carter gets into the car and drives away from the building. Carter pulls up outside Lynn's house, and they sit side by side, looking straight ahead.
Lieutenant called you.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
Last time I saw Robbie was at the National with you.
There's an informant. Somebody is telling Tennant that you were having an affair with Robbie. What'd you tell Larry?
Same thing I told Tennant. We were acquaintances. End of story.
What would he do if you were connected to the murder?
He'd resign.
How do I get into this?
Is that what you're thinking about?
No, I was thinking about you.
Tennant is a baby sleaze who wants to be a big sleaze. Nail a star, become a star. That's how these justice boys think.
A liberal star.
Two liberal stars, even better. I don't just play cards, you know.
Sorry.
How come you're always so polite?
It was my mother's answer to chaos. Now it's mine.
We had a fight. Robbie and me, an argument. Somebody could have heard something. He had a lot of anger in him. He said people had been treating him like shit too long. He wasn't going to take it.
Why didn't you tell me this before?
I didn't think it was important. I'm telling you now.
And you saw him again after this?
I have been such a fool. You do care for me, don't you?
Yes. I always have.
Carter goes to place his hand over Lynn's, but she draws it away.
There's something I've always wanted to ask you.
What?
How do you survive all those long political dinners?
Oh, I think about redecorating the room.
That, dear, is the most practical thing you've ever said.
Carter and Lynn stare out of the car window. Next, Carter is in the estate agent's office.
Konigsberg was near Busted and Ultimate. Then, 2 weeks later, he opened two offshore accounts.
Well, he had money.
A few $100,000 were deposited in these accounts.
Well, if you could have found this out, then the U.S. attorney could have also.
I would imagine so. Carr, you asked me to look into this, and I did. Now I want to ask you a favor.
Of course.
Don't drag me any deeper into this, okay?
Carter nods in agreement and leaves the office. Next, Emmick sits in front of a laptop in his studio. On the laptop and in front of Emmick are posters of a naked man kneeling with his hands tied behind his back. The man's underpants are draped over his head and face. Carter walks over and puts a mug on Emmick's desk.
Oh, I guess if it isn't offensive, it isn't art.
Look, these are Robbie Konigsberg's phone calls for the past 6 months.
How'd you get these?
Well, I know people too, you know. There's this guy who used to work for the DA's office.
You got these from him?
No. That was someone else, but the DA guy, he said, the night after the murder, Tennant's at this dinner and he gets a phone call, all right? He's up and he's gone. He doesn't say a word. And the next Monday, he comes up with this theory about Konigsberg and Lynn.
Who did he talk to?
I'm working on it, but look, one number starts popping up the last 2 months. Actually, it's two numbers. One is for Jack DeLorean's office and the other one is for his cell phone.
Abby's husband.
The old lion.
You know what they say about him? He never ran for office because he'd have to give up too much power. Oh, God.
Carter looks at negatives in a frame. Emmick gets up from his desk and walks over to Carter.
Hey, the other thing. Have you thought about
Is this really the right time to discuss this?
I think it's the perfect time. I have your full attention.
You want me to help you get a gallery show? I understand. I have discreetly inquired.
Yeah, discreetly. That's exactly the word I would like to talk to you about.
Be realistic. Look at this stuff. It's not exactly subtle. It's agitprop. It's incendiary.
Guess that means you're having.
I just don't want to feel used.
If you don't want to feel used, why are you in a relationship?
Natalie and Carter move away from a small group of people in evening clothes.
This embassy used to be a society graveyard. Supporting us in Iraq is the only smart thing Columbia ever did.
Natalie.
Oh, Jack. Oh, lovely. Thank you.
Car.
But hi, Jack.
I'm sorry.
Look at her.
People think marrying for money is easy. Not true. I'm living proof. Marrying for money is the hardest fucking job there is. You don't get the money. You just get to look at it. She's just discovering that.
Have you heard from Lynn?
No.
I haven't been able to reach her.
Well, perhaps that's best. Oh, here I am. Seating can make or break a party. It's probably not a good time to get involved in Lynn's problems.
Which problems?
Car. Let me give you a piece of Washington wisdom. Never stand between your friend and a firing squad. And there you are. And between us, the subhead of the Task Force on Terrorism. Man couldn't find the ground if he fell on it.
Natalie, I need to ask you a little favor.
No? What might that be?
Do you know why Robbie Collinsberg and Jack DeLorean were in close contact the last month and a half?
I believe you've mistaken me for a private investigator. Natalie Van Miter, P.I.
Next, Emek sits at the bar in the nightclub looking unhappy. He smokes his cigarette and looks around him. A man in a leather jacket moves through the crowd. He stands next to Emek, resting his arms on the bar.
Do you follow basketball?
Yes, I'm.
Were you a Michael Jordan fan?
But I liked the team better before they changed the name.
Let's go over here. There's a room. We can talk.
So who did you work for?
You know, some asshole in the State Department.
The man pushes Emek into a small room and holds a blade underneath his eye.
By your eyes, don't you?
Stop and you won't be in trouble.
Who are you gonna tell? Marty Frapp.
What do you want?
Stop playing a detective or you'll be working with a white cane. Tell your friend that, too. Tell him to do the right thing. You got it, sand nigger?
Emek lies on the floor. Next, waiters clear the tables as guests leave the benefit dinner. Carter sits beside his lawyer, Ethan.
You know Mark Hoban of Grenville, Klein & Hoban? He's Lochner's lawyer. He came to see me. Our firms have a fee-sharing arrangement. Hoban's firm has offered to cover any legal expenses you incur.
Why would they do that?
I didn't ask. Loyalty need not be dictated by financial concerns. Those were Hoban's words. Do you remember Susan McDougal? 2 years in jail because she wouldn't rat out Clinton.
Seems like another error.
It was.
Oh, excuse me for one sec. Yes? What happened? Where are you?
Carter walks down a darkened street and presses the bell in a warehouse apartment block.
Carter Page, friend of Amex.
Step forward, looking at a camera.
In the apartment, a man walks over to Carter and hands him a drink.
Bradley's from the gym. He's a physical therapist, you know.
Thank you. How is he?
I'm fine.
Well, he needs a couple of stitches. And should have an x-ray. Just be safe.
You can stay here.
No, I'm fine to go home.
You got to stop this. Putting yourself in danger.
Carter rubs Emmick's neck. Emmick stands up.
What else what? Huh? You're not going to help me get a gallery show?
This is not a joke.
Listen, he said to tell you to stop, to do the right thing.
Don't you recognize him?
Yeah, I would recognize him.
Who are you talking to? Sorry. What were you trying to find out?
Robbie's connection to DeLorean. Now, this guy was supposed to be an unhappy employee, right? And then he would tell me things that would make my ears ring. That part was right. So what'd Lynn say about the phone calls? Huh? Did you ask her?
I didn't have the chance.
What do you mean you didn't have the chance? What has she done for you, huh? Why are you trying to protect her?
It's not that simple.
Carter kisses the top of Emmick's head and moves away. Next, Carter runs into his apartment building. A police car with a flashing blue light is outside. He pushes open a door and sees a detective picking up a chair. Detective Dixon sees Carter in the doorway.
That's all right, officer. It's his apartment.
Carter walks into the room. A table lamp is tipped over onto a sofa where Robbie's cat sits in the corner. Detective Dixon puts a restraining hand on Carter's chest.
What's going on?
We have a court-issued warrant.
Mind arrest?
Not if you come in voluntarily. Nice apartment.
Detective Dixon wraps his knuckles on a wooden statue on a plinth.
Don't touch that.
It's Detective, Mr. Page. Do you recognize these?
No.
Is this Konigsberg's handwriting?
Konigsberg has no money. Then suddenly he has money. Then he's dead. Doesn't that seem like a legitimate avenue for a murder investigation? More relevant than, say, Len Lochner's relationship to the victim.
You'll have to ask Attorney Tennant about that.
I thought this was your investigation.
It is. Things aren't always what they seem. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used.
Mungo, you've kept my client waiting all night.
I'm not sure you understand the seriousness of your situation. Possession of stolen property.
Who told you it was stolen? Same person who told you where to find it.
You're saying he gave you his watch?
I have no idea how it came to be in my apartment.
There's no crime here.
I believe you're lying about the circumstances under which the body was found.
Attorney Tennant checks his watch as he walks over to a window in the interview room. A man on the other side of the window beckons to him.
I want to know why you're lying, why we found a zip disk from Konigsberg's computer in your apartment.
My computer doesn't even have a zip drive. Zip's a 20th century...
We know Lynn Lochner visited Konigsberg.
So bring her in.
She's not available. She left town.
Where'd she go?
Palm Beach. Her mother's sick. Don't you think that's convenient?
For you, yes. If you brought her in, a minority leader's wife, it might backfire. I assume you are thinking of high office.
Carter Page. Carter Page the turd. Mr. Withall, you should make it clear to your client he is on extremely thin ice.
I believe he is aware of that.
Ethan and I spoke earlier. Out of respect for your father, I'm going to recommend that you be released on your own recognizance. That'll give you time to give the matter some thought. In my experience, it's perjury that catches people out who think they're above the law. Not so much the deed itself, but the lying about it. If you decide to cooperate, there's certain things that can be overlooked. You contact Ethan.
Since you invoked my father's memory, there's something I'd like to say on his behalf. If alive, he would regret ever inspiring a person such as yourself to enter public service.
Carr, shut up.
Essentially, he's given you a 3-day pass. There was nothing on that disc.
Does Mungo just hate me? Is it all homosexuals, or is he determined to bring down Lochner, or is it just plain old-fashioned ambition?
Perhaps it's a convergence of all four.
Did you know about Lynn?
I tried to reach her.
And?
Unavailable. They've started a whispering campaign. The bright-eyed little errand boys from Justice. Lynn and Robbie having an affair. Lynn having something to do with his death. Lochner knowing about it.
The press isn't going to buy that. At
a certain point, it doesn't matter. Whispering campaign itself becomes a story.
I need to see Lochner.
What makes you think you'll see him?
Just contact him discreetly, see how he responds.
It's the wrong direction to take this.
What do you suggest?
Look to yourself, Carr. You may think you've got friends in this situation, but you don't. Decide what's in your best interest, and then act upon it.
Carter nods and walks down the stairs with Ethan. Next, Carter is in the estate agent's office clearing out his desk.
Carr.
Hello. I'm just picking up some of my things.
How do you know what I'm going to say?
Oh, you were going to tell me that because of market uncertainties, your accountant suggested scaling back and that I should take, leave?
Well, yeah, something like that.
I don't blame you, John. It won't be but a moment.
Carter switches off his computer. Next, he opens the refrigerator door and takes out a bottle of vodka. He pours himself a drink and sighs deeply. Carter sips his drink and then dials a number on his phone.
Hello?
Sunflower.
Carr, is that you?
No, it's a ravishing young teenager pretending to be me. How are you, Abigail?
How are you? Isn't it terrible?
What?
What they're trying to do to Lynn.
Well, who's trying to do to Lynn?
You know who, the Whisperers, the cave dwellers. They're trying to ruin her reputation.
These are cruel times.
In former days, men caught lying would have their testicles tied. Today, they get a TV show.
Did you just make that up, or were you saving it?
I was saving it for you. Let's have lunch. We need to laugh.
Jack is meeting with the vice president. His relatives are here. He's keeping me busy.
I understand. I'll see you at the Hargrave then.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye then. That Lancelot. It's the sound of doors closing all over town.
Carter strokes Robbie's cat. Next, Carter sits in his car by a lake and watches as a silver car draws up. Carter gets out of his car and into the back of the silver car where Larry Lochner is sitting.
Hop in.
Senator Lochner.
Larry.
Thanks for the offer, the legal expenses.
What are you talking about?
How's Lynn?
She's fine. She went to visit her mother. Her mother's health is failing.
How much do you know about Lynn, Robbie Collinsburg's death?
I just know what Lynn told me. She and Robbie were good friends. Nothing more.
But Collinsburg was a lobbyist for Ultimed. Your committee is investigating Ultimed.
We were investigating. Now we're just pretending to investigate. It's not my committee anymore.
She would have liked to talk to him.
Yes, but I wouldn't mind talking to the vice president either.
The VP? Why?
Just to see him lie.
Lynn is afraid you'll resign if she's somehow implicated in all this. I'm sure you must have heard the rumors.
No, that's not going to happen. I'm not going to step down. How do the rich get the poor to give them more money? They scare them. Under no circumstances am I stepping down.
But Lynn...
Lynn has an exaggerated notion of her importance in the larger scheme of things. Why are we meeting?
I'm trying to decide what to do. On the one hand, I'm disloyal. On the other, dishonest.
It's never easy. Look at the big picture.
Carter smiles slightly. Next, he lets himself into Emick's apartment.
Hey, listen to this. Mungo Tennant, William and Mary School of Law, class of 86. First intern, then partner in Colin McKim and Klein. A firm originally founded by Jack DeLorean. And senior partner, the vice president.
What are you doing?
What?
Are you still playing private investigator?
Only a little bit, just in cyberspace.
Just stop.
I'm trying to help you.
I don't want your help.
Carter walks away from Emmerich into the bathroom.
Don't you see what's going on? They got you on a railroad. And they're going to railroad you, and you just let it happen to you. You don't confront them. You're gonna end up in jail.
I can take care of myself.
No, you can. Anytime anything unpleasant happens, you just smile and tell a joke to your friends. You know what? You should be more like your father. He stood up. He wasn't afraid of scandals. He wasn't even afraid to take on the president.
You're a paparazzi. You make your money off a scandal. You have no idea what a scandal really means. How it destroys people. And then what comes after? We move to New York, buy a brownstone, adopt a brown baby, walk arm in arm around the village for the tourists to point at.
Why fucking not?
It's ridiculous.
It's normal.
We're ridiculous.
Carter and Emmick stare at each other across the desk.
You know, I've stayed here only for you. Don't know why I should have left 6 months ago.
Emmick sits on a chair and takes a cigarette out of a packet.
I don't want to lose you. I was taught wringing one's hands with a figure of speech.
I thought you could change, but you can't. Carter Page III. You'll never be like your father.
Carter picks up a carton of eggs from a bag and throws it at Emmick, hitting a poster behind him. Emmick glares at Carter, who strides away. He stops at the door and then walks back to Emmick.
They say I bend over. You should have seen my father. Well, there was a man who bent over. Carter Page II, the legendary Carter Page. The Watergate hearings, his great moment. Every day someone comes up and says, your father was a great man. And I smile and say, oh, yes, he was. He left Congress 20 times wealthier than when he entered. What does that tell you? He was a crook and a fraud. He was deeply ashamed of me.
But he's dead now. Don't judge the dead.
Why not? They judge us each and every day.
Emmick reaches out his hands, and Carter grasps them. Slowly, they kiss each other. Nighttime. Carter lies alone in his bed. He tosses and turns restlessly. Daytime. A quiet street. Office buildings. The Hargreave Club, where Carter meets with Lynn, Natalie and Abby. He walks up the stairs to the bar and looks into the empty card room. Natalie is sitting on a sofa reading a magazine.
Well, well, well. I was wondering if you'd have the guts to show up.
It's Wednesday, isn't it?
And you're ready to play?
Yes. Looks like it's just the two of us.
Canasta is not ideally a two-handed game. Carl, I love your nerve.
How about a drink, then?
Why not?
You look wonderful, Nat.
Why, thank you.
Henry, I'll have a sea breeze.
A vodka and tonic, please.
Certainly, ma'am.
We'll drink to the good memories.
Oh, don't talk to me about memory. Memory is a very unreliable organ. Trust me, Carr. It's right up there with the penis.
Oh, there's something I've been meaning to ask you. I thought of it last night, and I can't get it out of my head. Which actor portrayed the most U.S. presidents in movies?
Oh, you. Henry Fonda?
No, actual presidents. He played Lincoln, but in Failsafe, he was a fictional president.
Oh, I don't know. Charlton Heston.
Close, but only two. No, it was Rip Torn. He played Grant, Lyndon Johnson, and Richard Nixon. LBJ and Nixon, amazing.
Your drinks, Mr. Page.
Thank you, Henry.
Carter passes Natalie her drink. She rests her hand on his arm.
Don't let them get you down.
Well, I have had some illusions shattered.
We all have.
I thought we weren't an aggressor nation. I thought there was a separation between church and state. Hell, I even thought that the people elected the president.
Uh-huh. You know, Carr, you've always intrigued me. You think you're a black sheep. You're not a black sheep at all. Do you remember the question you asked me about Robbie and Jack DeLorean?
Yeah, I apologize. I was out of line.
Your friend Robbie was up to something. Always follow the money. Sometimes it's oil, sometimes it's pharmaceuticals. I think it's time you and Lynn had a talk about that.
I tried to reach her. She left town. I tried her mother's to no avail.
Do you have a pencil and paper? Pen, even better. You can be so naive. Now you can reach her here. Don't be so goddamn polite. Now, what were we talking about?
Rip Torn.
No. We were talking about your wanting to be a black sheep. In the end, all you have is your breeding. It's all that separates them from us.
Breeding. My great-grandfather got rich off slavery. And when the Yankees took that away, my grandfather made his money raising tobacco. I don't have any breeding.
If your great-grandfather were alive today, he'd fit right in.
A plane flies low over an airport hotel. Carter walks down a long hotel corridor and listens at a door before knocking.
Expecting any FedEx.
Laying his car, open up.
FedEx. That was lame.
Jesus. What's going on?
How did you find me?
I did some checking.
Oh, your friend from the newspaper. Maybe I should move.
Who are you afraid of? May I sit?
Forgive me. Would you like some water?
Please.
Mm-hmm. Lynn takes a drink over to Carter.
I left Larry.
Does he know where you are?
No.
Palm Beach.
My mother has always been helpful.
Out with it. I've been getting a lot of advice lately. Let me give you some advice. Tell me what the fuck is going on.
Are you threatening me?
Yes. Now, what was the deal with Robbie?
You don't know what it's like. Think you do? You act as if it's awesome. I hate it. I'm not special. I just want what other women want. Is that so terrible? A husband, a marriage, a family, to be loved. There is no such thing in this environment. They talk about it, oh, they talk, but there isn't. They don't need women, they fuck each other.
And Robbie was different.
I was gonna leave Larry, I'd made up my mind. Robbie was making all the arrangements and Abby said he was broke. That was not true. He had money coming in.
Now let's go real slow. He was gonna testify before Larry's committee on Ultimate.
But he backed out.
Why?
He said, why give away something valuable for free? I said he was crazy. He was playing with fire, but I was crazy too. We both were.
Now go back to when you found him. What'd you see when you came into the apartment? What did Robbie know? He was expecting someone to get a payment? What did he have that was so valuable? A computer disk. What was Robbie thinking? What was he doing? Jack DeLorean.
He was dead when I came in.
And the crotch came after the first stabbing. It was an afterthought.
You took something.
What do you mean?
The killer took something off Robbie. It was a photo of him and me. It wasn't explicit, but it was affectionate. That's it, isn't it? That's how I got pulled into this.
Oh, Robbie. Robbie, you fool.
I loved him. What am I gonna do?
Lynn sits with her head in her hands. Next, Carter is in his apartment.
Hello.
Abby.
Car, is that you?
Missed you at the Hargrave today. It was like Christmas without a tree. Robbie's murder.
I was just going over it in my head, and I think I know what he was up to. He was blackmailing the vice president.
That's crazy.
Think about it.
Robbie being tight for money, his involvement with the VP and Ultimate, his resentment. On the phone, he said something about making a sale, said things were finally coming around his way.
He couldn't be that stupid.
Well, I think he was.
Carter. What?
Elvis is dead.
Yeah, it is a bit far-fetched. Did the fabric
arrive yet?
Yesterday.
How does it look?
We'll get together. I'll call you next week.
It's a date.
Night, then. I've got to run.
Night, Sunflower. Well, nice lot. Let's see what comes of that.
Carter strokes the cat. Next, Emek develops a picture in his darkroom. He hangs it up and Carter looks at it.
Get some clothes, I'll be back.
I should come along.
Well, you had that movie opening?
Premiere.
Ah.
And it's a good story, you know, the daughter of a liberal black congressman falls in love with the son of a right-wing senator. And they run off and their parents join forces to find him. It all ends up in Disney World where, after much hilarity, they all understand the meaning of tolerance.
That sounds terrific. I'll see you later.
Take care.
Carter leaves the building. He hesitates when he sees a man lying partly underneath his car.
Hey!
The man gets up, a tool in his hand.
Miss Page, I just want to talk. Hey, it was only a warning.
Carter begins to walk away. The man follows him. Carter walks faster. Then he starts to run, and the man runs after him. Emek leaves the building and sees the man chasing after Carter. Emek runs after them. Carter pushes past a group of people in the street. The man follows, dropping the tool. Emek runs after him, taking his picture on his phone. Carter runs on. The man stops as Emek takes another picture. The man is hit by a car and tossed over the bonnet. Emek beckons to Carter. Carter searches the man on the ground.
Let's go.
He finds his wallet, which has the picture of Robbie and Lynn inside.
Let's go. Come on.
Is that his ID?
Emek drives Carter down a country road in the dark.
Took some humongous tests. Konigsberg, I mean. Blackmailed the vice president.
Desperate men do desperate things.
Stupid men do stupid things.
That's it right there.
Turn left here. Emek pulls into a long tree-lined drive and stops in front of a large house. Carter and Emek get out of the car and walk up to the front door. Carter knocks on the door. Abby looks through a small window at the side of the door.
What are you doing here, Father?
Abigail, my sunflower. I need to see Jack.
Is he expecting you?
No.
What's going on?
The shack in his office.
He does not like to be disturbed, Carter. You know that.
Well, I'm going to speak with him, Abby. This is my friend, Emmy.
Hi.
You need something to drink? Coffee, Diet Coke?
Regular, thank you.
Abby will take you in the kitchen, get you a Coke while you're in there, make sure she doesn't make any phone calls.
Doesn't make any phone calls.
I am going to talk to him now.
No.
This won't take long.
Jack does not like to be disturbed,
Carter.
Don't
worry, it will be fine. Just take a minute. Come on.
What the hell is it now? I'll call you right back.
I need to talk to you.
Call and make an appointment. Now, will you please get out of my house?
Carter walks over to Jack and shows him the pictures on Emick's phone.
His name's Edgar Kaminsky, ex-Marine Corps, ex-FBI. His last known employment was head of Altamed Security. He also worked for you. No need to track him down. This photo was taken about a minute later.
It's a criminal act to leave the scene of a crime.
Call the cops. You know what I think? I think Kaminsky was two-timing you. Worked for you, found out about Lynn and Robbie, sold it to Mungo.
Pretty good guess. Sit. What do you want? You want to get Tennant off your back?
That'd be good.
Man's an asshole. Where'd you get that name, Mungo?
I believe it's British.
I'll do what I can.
Lynn Lochner's as well.
Have you talked to her husband, Larry? Did he tell you that this is a war? He likes to talk like that. Well, this little war is over. He lost. You lost.
I wasn't a combatant.
Sometimes we don't have a choice. Listen, Carr, it's not personal. I like you. I like your father. But you're on the wrong side of history. People don't want your radical ideas, your agenda, your lifestyle. People want a story. A good American story.
Yeah, maybe a murder story. One that you wrote.
Me? Of course not. People think I have some kind of secret power. I don't. I'm not even elected. I'm just an old man. Has a lot of old friends. I'm an old man that always puts my country first.
And Robbie's dead.
The cemeteries are full of dead guys. He was a criminal. He was involved in a criminal act, and he met criminal consequences. As for the opportunist, like Attorney Tennant, who tried to exploit the situation for political purposes, they were on the wrong side, too. And they will get their due. It's time to move on. Lynn, to get back to her life. You did the right thing, Carr.
So all's forgotten.
Nothing to remember. Whoever knows what really happens.
I know.
Well, bully for you. Are we finished? Good.
Carter picks up his coat as he gets up from the chair.
How did you get past Abby? How did she ever let you in here?
She was more interested in her television program, Antiques Roadshow.
Figures. Goodbye, Carr.
Bye.
Carter leaves the room. Jack picks up the phone. Carter and Emick drive away from the house.
So do you still feel comfortable staying in my place tonight?
Maybe we should look for another place.
A police car with a red flashing light is behind Emick's car.
Put your seatbelt on.
It's broke. This is broken, dude.
Alright, just relax.
Emmick shakes his head as the policeman approaches with his torch. He shines the torch in Emmick's face as he winds down the window.
Emmick Yagwu, please step outside the vehicle. Both of you. Turn around. Get your feet apart. Hands on top of the vehicle. Place your hands behind your backs. You're under arrest for leaving the scene of an accident.
Said DeLorean took care of it, huh?
No doubt he knows. Just shut up.
Daytime. Carter and Emmick are with Ethan in a car.
Any additional charges?
That's what we'll find out.
Here. Emmick, that one.
Mungo's putting on a bit of a show. It's called a perp walk.
It's a little like a society opening.
Cameras, reporters, but different jewelry.
In all the years I've known you, Ethan, I never knew you had a sense of humor.
This was going to test it.
Ethan, Carter, and Emmick get out of the car. A throng of reporters are on the court steps. A rolling news line says, breaking news, son of Carter Page II, Carter Page III, arrested with male associate in ongoing investigation. Carter sits at a desk in a police interview room. Detective Dixon walks in, pulls out a chair and sits in front of Carter, who is behind a metal grill.
How are you?
Good, considering. There's a refreshing lack of choice and a completely new social set.
I've spoken to your attorney. We're going to keep you till the morning, then you and Mr. Yoglu will be released.
And the search for Robbie's killer?
That would be Mr. Kaminsky, the fellow hit by the SUV. He left some blood at the scene. We have a DNA match.
And Mungo Tennant.
Attorney Tennant has taken a leave of absence. I don't think he'll be returning. Sorry about the publicity and everything. A mistake was made. But it's all worked out.
Yeah.
Next, Carter's apartment. Ornaments in protective wrapping. Books in a cardboard box. Carter takes books from a shelf and Emmick packs them into the cardboard box.
Do you remember what I was telling you about that that offer for the gallery show in New York? I came through.
Notoriety has its upside, I guess.
Well, they'll explode the headlines. You can't avoid that. Listen. I want you to come to the opening, okay?
Let me think about it.
See you in New York.
Not for long.
I wish I'd been there.
He said it was on consignment.
Oh, he wasn't asking you to pay retail.
No, I said, don't start pulling on that string or the whole fabric of our world will unravel.
Knock, knock.
Car. We're trying to play.
Don't worry, I'm not staying. I just have something to return to Lynn.
You're welcome to stay.
Yes, please stay. We're so happy to see you.
The women stare at Carter as he looks around the room. Natalie glares at him.
Lynn.
Lynn smiles at the women, puts her cards on the table, and follows Carter out of the room, closing the door behind her.
Congratulations.
For what?
I hear the happy couple, Lynn and Larry Lochnow, are back together.
There's a function tonight, in fact. We'll be there together, make nice, consort with the enemy. You have something for me?
I didn't want you to worry about where this might be.
Thank you.
Lynn puts the photo in her handbag.
Why did you stand by me? You thought I killed Robbie, didn't you?
Of course not.
Not even a little?
Well, maybe a little.
But after everything you went through, you stood by me. Why?
I spent my life without any real idea of why I behaved as I did. I thought Robbie's murder was a mystery. That's not a mystery. One's own life, that's a mystery. A grown man acting on the fears of a child, trying to impress a father dead 10 years. Now that's a mystery.
Strange how things work out.
Bye, Lynn.
Carter kisses Lynn on the cheek and pauses at the top of some steps. Lynn stares at him and then walks back into the card room. The end.